Word of mouth.
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 Well done.
Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. In December of 1931, a group of men and women were arrested at the Heart of New York Gymnasium for exercising in the buff. 24 seized in raid on nudist cult, read the New York Times headline. Shortly thereafter, the same newspaper reported that Judge Jonah Goldstein dismissed the charges against the so-called cult, stating that what is all right on the beach today would have meant arrest 3 years ago. It is a story told at the start of a new book called Naked, A Cultural History of American Nudism. And author Brian Hoffman joins us now with more. Brian, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
So your book is about American nudism, but nudism as a movement was largely exported to the U.S. from Germany. So give us a story there.
Sure. So in Germany, this has been happening as part of a larger movement called Lebensreform, which is this kind of return to nature. They believed in natural healing, they're against alcohol consumption, and they also believed that going naked was a way to return to nature.
And when was this?
1905 is, I think, the way most historians mark it, and it definitely is kind of what sparks these nudist camps that both develop in the German countryside, but also in the urban areas.
So what was going on in America in the late 20s and early 30s when this Heart of New York Gymnasium raid took place? What kind of cultural forces were paving the way for American nudism at that time?
In America, you're seeing this like gradual shift away from the moral absolutism of the 19th century, that the discussion of sex had to really be kept secret or repressed. This is moving away. We're starting to see a greater acceptance of birth control, of kind of titillating films, books dealing with controversial subjects are now being accepted. And so with this shift away from kind of sexual repression, you see people kind of open up to the idea of nudism in the United States. You start seeing books of travel narratives from Americans who have visited German camps become very popular. And then you have kind of German immigrants groups wanting to recreate the Nackt culture experience that they had enjoyed in Germany.
Nackt culture?
Nackt culture is like basically culture of the nude.
Mm-hmm.
And so they start developing these very small groups in kind of immigrant communities, New York City, Chicago. In America, though, it expands beyond that. So it becomes kind of a phenomenon where you have people from all walks of life choosing to go naked as a way of combating shame in America, but also promoting health.
Mm-hmm. This is at a time when there were a lot of reactionary movements to industrialism and urbanization in American life.
So yes, during the Progressive Era, there's a great deal of concern about diseases of darkness, things like rickets or tuberculosis. Doctors would all the time send people out west to places like New Mexico and Arizona to have that dry climate, the exposure to the sun. So nudists build on that by removing the clothes in nudist camps, in gymnasiums. They not only soak up the sun and get vitamin D production going, which is supposed to be good for all different sorts of things, but also removing the clothes, allowing the glands, the sweat glands, to do what they're naturally supposed to do. And this becomes quite popular as nudists practice it, but also in the medical profession, and in hospitals would have solariums. So it's that kind of idea that the sun is a cure, that it is therapeutic, that allows nudists to kind of appeal to a whole segment of American society that's interested in natural healing and alternative medicine.
So that's what's going on socially. How about legally? What was the landscape for nudism in the 1930s?
Definitely legal history is part of what makes nudism possible. The American Civil Liberties Union are trying to open up expression in the United States, especially in the first decades of the 20th century. And nudism becomes part of that struggle. The first thing that kind of falls is like books with literary and scholarly merit, which is what really allows nudist books to be on the open market in the United States. But they do become embroiled in other cases, because they walk this fine line of what is and isn't acceptable, what is illicit and what is respectable. And actually, that's one of the fascinating things to me about this movement. There are people who are sincerely about health and combating shame, but then there are others who are about also promoting the eroticism of the naked body to make a quick buck. But the line is never clear. And I think it speaks to the way Americans kind of understand the naked body, which is it has these contradictory and multiple functions of being about health and beauty and aesthetics, but also about eroticism and pornography. And so that line is a question that really challenges the courts from really the time nudism begins in the early 1930s all the way into the 1960s and 70s.
Well, let's talk about making a buck. Central to the nudism movement was this flagship magazine. It was called Sunshine and Health.
Yes.
Now, this is something that people gravitated toward because it did have, you know, photographs of naked people. But first, how important was this publication to organizing and actually promoting American nudism?
Yeah, it was really essential to putting nudism on the map in the United States. After these books kind of run their course, it's the magazine that allows the early nudist organizations to communicate about camps, about their philosophy, about what's happening in the movement. It is their internet of the day. So it was critical to establishing the movement in the United States. And the man who's really behind it is this guy. He's a fascinating character, the Reverend Illy Boone. And he is really critical to these magazines, fighting for the legal right to publish them, and then promoting them. They're really actually pretty beautiful magazines. They have wonderful covers. They're really highly and well-produced. But what you end up seeing is this kind of imbalance of pictures. Like on the cover, very attractive, usually female, sometimes families. And in the inside, you see this assortment of pictures that is much more, how do you say, honest to the nudist lifestyle.
Yeah, the post office didn't even want to deliver those magazines. I'm speaking with Brian Hoffman. He's author of the book Naked, A Cultural History of American Nudism, which traces nudism from its roots in Germany to the rise of the family nudist resort and much beyond. So there is this undeniably erotic aspect to nudism. Now, how did that start to shape public perception about nudism during and after World War II, when there was a general sort of liberalization of the culture?
During the Second World War, because you have so many troops in all-male environments away from home, they become much more accepting of things like pinups.
Right. And Betty Grable is at everyone's bunk, right?
Yes, everyone. All these actresses, pinups everywhere, on airplanes, all over the place. And it's part of accepted is the culture. And so you get these reports from soldiers writing into Sunshine Health thanking them for making such a wonderful magazine that's circulating around the barracks. And the nudists reprint this in their magazines, and they're proud to be part of this war effort. It not only allows the nudist movement to kind of to support itself during the war through these magazines, but after the war, people are aware of the camps, and they want to see them. And so when they come back, you see an explosion of membership in nudist camps that I think is really growing out of the exposure nudism gained through the armed forces.
But you also have what you call the single man problem at these nudist resorts. Now, what is that exactly?
The single man problem definitely grows out of this popularity that these nudist magazines had during the Second World War. You get a lot of single men coming to these camps. But single men, they are somewhat suspect. They could be there to soak up the sun. On the other hand, they could also be there as voyeurs. They can be there to be looking for sexual, you know, trysts. They could be there to check out other men. And this was something that was a constant tension at many nudist camps, especially as they saw their membership skew heavily male. And it kind of threatened what nudism was all about during this period, which is about the family and being heteronormative.
But it sounds kind of like a precursor to the kind of problems that many, you know, clubs have, nightclubs have had through the ages, and now dating sites are coping with, very heavily male skewed.
Yes, absolutely. Like, these things attract the attention of men. And nudism was no exception, definitely a precursor to those kind of things where you have bars that, you know, attract women with, you know, free drinks and dating sites that give women extra freebies. I think, you know, whereas men have to pay for certain things, women don't have to pay to access different accounts. And nudist clubs were doing the same thing, that they would offer cheaper memberships for women or more expensive memberships for single men, that they had to carry their weight if they weren't bringing their family with them. In New Hampshire, there's Cedars Waters Village, and they still only allow couples. Mm-hmm. Like, that is their rule. Only men can come with when they're accompanied with women. That is largely faded from most camps nowadays. It's much more open. This is a privately held camp, and they've been around since 1950, and they're holding on to those kind of rules that were established in this post-war period.
Well, you know, I've been hearing about that camp my entire life growing up in New Hampshire. I think we all sort of get this idea about it, and it, you know, tinged with this sense of illicitness. But you spoke to the kind of heteronormative formation of these camps, especially at that time. This was liberalization, I guess, on some level, but not quite. Still very family-centric. What was there a tension there?
Yes. There's an acceptance now that, you know, people have sex. You know, it is part of life. Men and women, people accept the dating culture. They accept that they're going to go to the movies, that there's this petting culture before marriage. But as long as that's kind of contained within the male-female relationship between marriage, ultimately resulting in a family and normalcy, then in American society, that type of sexuality is fine. What's not accepted are things that go against the grain, such as homosexual relationships, interracial intimacy, and a real kind of elephant in the room is the intergenerational sexuality or pedophilia, child molestation. These things raise major concerns, both within nudism, but also outside, people looking in at camps, like what's going on behind those walls, those fences.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. I'm speaking with Brian Hoffman. He's author of Naked, A Cultural History of American Nudism. And when we come back, we'll talk about how the sexual revolution of the 1960s fractured the nudist movement and where nudism stands today in the age of the selfie. I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is Word of Mouth from NHPR. This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott, speaking with Brian Hoffman, author of Naked, A Cultural History of American Nudism. Before the break, we talked with him about the origins of nudism as kind of a response to urban industrialization and the thin line that American nudists have walked between an ideology of physical well-being to the gradual exploitation and eroticization of nudism. In the post-World War II era, nudist camps flourished in rural settings across the United States, largely fleeing from persecution inside of urban centers. And in these camps, they were promoting a strictly heteronormative, family-oriented experience that excluded single men, homosexuals, and interracial relationships. How about the sexual revolution and the sort of hippie and free love movement in the 1960s? How did that change nudist culture?
Yes, the counterculture 1960s, it is really interesting. It's one of the things I enjoyed writing most about this book, is how fractured the movement becomes during this period. In the 1960s, there's this new generation that wants to use nudity, and specifically public nudity, to challenge what they see as being the hypocritical values of American society. So they no longer want to confine themselves to these camps. They want to be on the beach, they want to be in the park, and they want to have the right to kind of unclothe and to undress where and when they want as a way of being authentic. This is what the nudist movement then becomes, is this like loose assortment of organizations and groups and people that is much more confrontational about public nudity in a lot of different spaces. These nudists, these new generation of counterculture kind of hippies going naked, definitely conflict with an older generation that is much more about respectability and is not comfortable with the kind of erotic implications of the naked body.
So this is an academic book, and we never really get a sense of how you, Brian Hoffman, feel about nudism. So what made you want to write about this subject? Are you a nudist yourself?
Sure. I'm not a nudist. I actually think that's important. There's been a lot of people that have written from inside the movement and have provided us hagiographies of the movement, and those are fantastic. But I also thought it was good to have, like, step back and look at this movement as a historian. My personal interest, and it kind of comes from, like, unresolved questions of my own childhood, I think. I grew up with parents who were definitely hanging on to the counterculture a little bit too long. As a child, I was let free to roam the backyard completely naked. I grew up in this kind of funky neighborhood in Los Angeles called Mount Washington, and we would have block parties, and those were definitely clothing optional. And it was part of my childhood, going naked. In our photo album, there's all sorts of pictures that, you know, you probably don't want to show your girlfriend. But as I grew older, I realized that not everyone, all families were like this, that this was sort of odd. And this kind of, when I got into grad school and I was looking what to study, it was this question of why do Americans have this uncomfortable relationship with the body? You know, why is it so linked with shame? Why was my childhood so different? And I think as I stumbled across these nudist materials, it was a really great opportunity to answer that question, to use this kind of marginal oddball movement to look at how Americans have thought about the body, you know, over the course of the 20th century.
But how about today in this kind of super sexualized culture, a nude resort for adults anyway, seems almost, I don't know, quaint or for, you know, oddballs, I guess might be the reputation that goes on. But then again, there are still campaigns to free the nipple, you know, debates over public breastfeeding and laws that continue to make public nudity a criminal act. So has our culture's relationship with nudity changed all that much?
You know, I've been following the Free the Nipple campaign and a lot of the different things going on.
Maybe you should first tell people what it is, because I'm not sure everyone knows.
Sure. So there's been an effort by celebrities, but also everyday people, that women should have the right to kind of display their bodies in the same way a man is generally able to display his chest or torso, whether they're on the beach or in their homes, or really it's on Facebook or Instagram. And what you're seeing is a different conversation emerging about what should and shouldn't be seen. We're no longer talking about judges or the government saying it's wrong or illegal to display your breasts on Facebook. It's Mark Zuckerberg. And I think that's different. When we are producing the content, when we are deciding to display it, and we decide who our friends are, we feel that no company should tell us what we can and cannot show. So I think that's really different. The other thing that's going on, I think, in American society or even in the world, is the digitization of life has made us much more comfortable displaying our bodies. We take selfies now. These selfies are often of us on clothes. And because we don't have to worry about bringing them in to be developed anywhere, that they're ours, they're private, that we keep them on our phones or on our computers, we've become comfortable with seeing our naked bodies and showing them. I don't think nakedness is as big a deal, especially for the younger digitized generation. And it's something that nudists have embraced. It's actually as strong a movement as it's ever been. It's a $400 million industry that is kind of accepting a tremendous growth in its membership at this point. There's all sorts of events, you know, naked cycling movements and Free the Nipple, naked protests all the time. When I was in San Francisco, the Castro was having this debate about people going naked on the street there. And it wasn't a debate about completely banning it, but like having them bring their towels when they sit down. Hmm. So I do think things are shifting quite dramatically. The fact that these things are going on is, I think, a reflection that people's attitudes are changing.
Brian Hoffman, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Brian Hoffman, he's author of Naked, A Cultural History of American Nudism. You'll find more on the book at wordofmouthradio.org.